on?
Good morning.
Yes.
Psalm 34. I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise shall continually be in my mouth. My soul shall make its boast in the Lord. The humble shall hear it and rejoice. Oh, magnify the Lord with me, and let us exalt his name together. As I share my personal testimony this morning, that is the reason I share my testimony, not to share with you the difficult times we have been through, but to share with you how faithful God has been, that we might exalt his name together. I was born and raised in western Kansas. I grew up on a wheat and cattle farm there. I loved growing up on the farm. I loved driving tractors, riding horses.
Sorry.
I was a tomboy. A good example of that happened one summer when I was about 11 years old. We were at our local county fair and rodeo, and during an intermission in the rodeo, they had what we called then a catch-it-calf contest. When a calf was released in the rodeo arena and in a group of boys, and the boy who was able to get his rope on the calf and take it out of the arena got to keep the calf. Well, I wanted to be on in that arena with those boys. But there weren't any girls that I remember at all. That didn't happen back then. And I remember hanging on the fence of that arena, longing to be on the other side. All of a sudden, I heard a little noise behind me. And I looked around, and a neighbor farmer was standing by his pickup, holding out a rope. Well, very quickly, I had that rope, and I was over the fence. And a few minutes later, I drug the calf out of the arena. Followed by a group of very disgusted boys. When I was about 8 years old, my folks were invited to evangelistic services in our small hometown, and there they accepted Jesus Christ as their Lord and Savior. My brother and sister and I very quickly followed their example, so I was raised in a Christian home. When I went to high school, we had a new speech teacher, and he decided to form a debate club. I went to the first meeting, and there was a young man there named Larry Schlotfeld. Our coach was a very astute man, and he soon realized that Larry should lead the team that debated the positive side of the question, and I should lead the team that debated the negative side of the question. We joke sometimes and say things haven't changed much over the years. Well, Larry and I dated and debated throughout high school. After graduation, he went east to Lawrence, Kansas, to the University of Kansas, and I went west to Central Business College in Denver, Colorado. When I graduated, I got a job as a stenographer in the Denver office of the FBI. We got married and we lived in Denver. Larry attended Denver University. Well, as the months went by, I decided I really wanted to get a degree too. I loved English. I loved grammar, diagramming sentences. So I thought I would like to go back to school too. Larry was going to teach Spanish. He loved Spanish, and we thought this would be so ideal. Two salaries in a home weren't that common back then, so we thought we would have lots of money to do what we wanted to do, to help others. If we had children, they'd have the same schedule that we did. We'd have our summers free to travel. We wanted to travel, so we thought we had really great plans. So we went the fall of 1963, back to KU. I as a freshman and Larry as a junior. We were there one semester, went back for the Christmas holidays to spend with our families. My dad decided to go to Colorado Springs to visit my newly married sister, so we decided to go with them. I remember we spent New Year's Eve with his family in town, so we probably got out to the farm after midnight, got up at 4 o'clock in the morning, probably ate a good farm breakfast, and we headed for Colorado Springs. As I walked out to the car that morning, under that night sky with the stars, I didn't realize it was the last time that I would ever walk. We had just gone over the Colorado border when we met the first car we had seen that morning, a young man 22 years old, and he was drunk. We met him on a curve, so my dad didn't realize he was on our side of the road until it was too late. My dad turned to drive into the ditch, but he still hit us. I was asleep at the time of the wreck, so I have no memory of the accident, but I remember coming to afterward, and my head was on the cold, hard roadside there in Colorado. Larry was kneeling at my head, and I was so confused. I said, "Where were we going?" And he said, "Honey, we were going to Marianne's house." My sister's name meant nothing to me. I couldn't even remember my name. And as I laid there, I thought, what's wrong with me? I can't feel anything but the back of my head. And, you know, I knew nothing about spinal cord injuries. There weren't young people in wheelchairs in those days. I thought if you broke your neck, you died. So my thought was, I must be crushed. I must be dying. And I began to feel panic. And I called out the name of Jesus. I've always found that very interesting. I didn't know my sister's name. I didn't know my name. But I called out to Jesus. My dad stepped over where I was, and he prayed for me. And, you know, a peace came over my heart. And it wasn't shock, because that peace stayed with me the entire time that I was in the hospital after the wreck. My mother and I were taken by ambulance to a small Colorado hospital there, Cheyenne Wells. And I was put in a hallway while they worked over my mother for quite a long time. Then I was put in a storage room because they didn't have any rooms in the hospital. I could barely move my arms at all, so Larry fixed a bell on a rope so that I could bump it when I needed help. Larry stayed with me day and night through the week that I was there. And afterwards, long afterwards, whenever a bell would ring, he would startle. After about a week, I was flown in a small ambulance plane to KU Medical Center in Kansas City, Kansas. The doctors there examined me and told Larry that my neck was broken between the fifth and sixth cervicals in my neck. They operated hoping that if they could remove the bones, the chips, the fragments from my spinal cord, that I would be okay. But when they opened up the cord, they saw that it was completely frayed all the way around, and they told him at that time that I would never walk. Excuse me. I was not told that. It was something that I came to realize as the months went by. They drilled holes in my head and put Crutchfield tongs in for traction, tongs that tighten as you pull them. And I was put into a bed called a striker frame. It's like a sandwich, canvas on top, canvas on the bottom, and you're between, so they can flip you every once in a while to try to prevent pressure sores. When I was able to be out of the striker frame and put in a regular hospital bed, the physical therapist came up to my room and tried to work with me on the movement that I had in my arms. They would strap small weights, I think they were about 2 pounds, into my fingers with ACE bandages. And I was supposed to raise them up as I laid in bed. I would get them up and they would come down and hit me. And of course, it didn't hurt when they hit my body. It hurt when I hit my head. But I remember what a terrible struggle that was. I was a farm girl. I lifted grain sacks, and I couldn't lift 2 pound weights. As I got stronger, and they began to put me on a gurney, and take me down to the physical therapy department, put me on a mat on the floor, and first they tried to teach me to turn over so that I could turn over in bed and try to prevent pressure sores. They strapped my hands into pulleys with weights on them to try to increase the strength in my arms. And when I got strong enough, they taught me to slide on a sliding board from the mat over to my wheelchair. After a few months of that, they decided that it was time to let me go home. So they called Larry into their office and they said, "We're going to let you take Benita home, but we want you to know what you're up against." They told him she's a quadriplegic. That means I have paralysis in all four extremities. My left hand is still quite paralyzed. They told him that they had had the head gynecologist examine me and that we would never have children. They told him that because of respiratory ailments, my diaphragm muscles are partially paralyzed, pressure sores, and urinary tract infections. My life expectancy was probably 5 to 7 years. I have a line across my chest right here. If you were to take a pin and go down at this point, I would no longer feel the pin pricks. Basically, they told him that he would take me home and care for me until I passed away. Larry was 19 years old when we were in the car wreck. And as you can imagine, he was a very discouraged young man. The months that followed were very, very difficult months with lots of ups and downs. And as I had these urinary tract infections, my fever would go up to 105. And he would try to ice me down to bring the fevers down. And each one would leave me a little weaker. I remember in the hospital once the nurse told me my fever was 106 degrees. We had a good friend there in Lawrence. It was a professor's wife named Catherine who cared for us and prayed for us. And she kept asking us to go to church with her. We said, "We can't. I couldn't sit up long enough to sit through a church service." And she kept praying. And, you know, God answered her prayers by giving my young husband a wisdom far beyond his years. Remember, he came into the room one day and he said, "Benita, do you remember when you used to slide from the mat into your chair?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "We're going to try that. We're going to work at that." And I said, "Honey, I can't. I could hardly sit up at all." And he said, "No, we're going to try that." And he said, "If you won't try, I'm going to go downtown and eat my breakfast alone." He said, "I don't have to stay here with you if you won't try." Well, I tried. I didn't want to be left alone. And I made it into my chair. My old chair, the first one I had, was an Everston Jennings with a back that slanted way back like that. But even then, I couldn't sit up. And so I got into my chair, and I passed out. Well, he had worked hard to get me into the chair. He wasn't going to let me get back into bed. So he just tipped the chair back toward the floor until I came to. He set me upright and I passed out. So he tipped the chair back toward the floor until I came to. And he set me up and I passed out. Well, we worked at that day after day until I was able to sit up for quite long periods at a time. And this friend said, "Now you can come to church." You know, I didn't want to go back to church. As I said, there weren't young people in wheelchairs in those days. This was before the Vietnam War, when young men began to come back from the battlefield in wheelchairs. If anyone was in a wheelchair, they probably had MS or muscular dystrophy. And you were treated very, very differently. People were afraid I had something. They really didn't want you around. I got a lot of stares or else averted eyes. People wouldn't look at you. It was very hard for a 20-year-old. But we went with her to church, and God bless those people. It was a small Free Methodist church in Lawrence, Kansas, and they welcomed us with open arms. And, you know, we got back into God's Word. we got back into fellowship with God's people. Oh, that is so important. You know, when we are hurting, one of our instincts is to withdraw. And it's the worst thing you can do. That's when you really need God's people. Well, Larry, by that time, had graduated, was teaching junior high there. He had student taught in a junior high, and the teacher had left the next year, and they offered Larry the job. So we were able to stay in Lawrence. A few months after we started to attend that church, I began to feel kind of strange and different, and I went to the doctor, and he said, "You are expecting a baby." Well, that was a shock to us. But this doctor, bless him, he was quite a jolly man, and he said, "I have never had a quadriplegic deliver a baby." He said, "I have no idea what to expect." But he said, "I'll have a cesarean kit handy if necessary." And then he said, "This is so exciting." And I was glad he was excited because I was scared. By that time, I was doing some housework, but taking care of a baby is a different thing. I wrote my mom, and to best of my memory, she wrote back a letter, and she said, "Vanita, if God gives you a baby, he will give you the means to take care of that baby." And I've since heard the expression, "The finger of God does not point the way where the hand of God does not make a way." And I have found that to be so true. Well, I had an appointment on February the 22nd, and I didn't get to see that doctor again the whole time. That was Dr. Hermes. But I saw his partner, who was a very aloof man, and he said, "Well, I think it's going to be a few more weeks before the baby is due." And I was kind of disappointed. I kind of thought when I began to feel differently and when I thought the baby would be due. So we went home thinking it would be a few more weeks. Well, the next afternoon, Larry and I were sitting together when he got home from school having a cup of coffee. All through the years, we've had a little ritual where when he got off work, we would have coffee together and just talk about our day. And as we sat there, all of a sudden, I realized I felt these funny little flutters. And I told him about them, and to be funny, he said, "Well, let's time them." He had a stopwatch. And we timed them, and they were every 3 minutes apart. Very quickly, they were every 55 seconds apart. And it made Larry very nervous. This was on his stopwatch. Well, Larry, if you ask him, he doesn't even remember the 3 minute ones. All he remembers are the 55 second ones. So he said, "I'm going to call the doctor." And I said, "Well, honey, I just saw the doctor last night." And he said it wouldn't be for quite some time. And the first time he called, I got him to hang up because I was embarrassed. But he called again, and the doctor said, "Will you bring her in?" It was Dr. Hermes. He was on call. He said, "You bring her in, I'll check her over, and it will relieve your mind." So we drove to the hospital. Larry will say about 10 minutes later, we had a little baby girl. And he said it did relieve his mind. That was Lori Catherine, born on February the 23rd, 1966. Lori was a very special little baby. Larry took a bassinet and he cut a rectangle out of the side of it, made a little net gate so that I could put that down and slide her out. He made a table that went on my wheelchair. I could put a blanket on that, slide her out, and take care of her. My mother came to stay for a week, and then she left. Larry went to work, and I was left alone with that baby. I went to get her out of the bassinet and got her over to the blanket, took her pajamas off, and I saw Larry had left the diaper pins in. I could not do diaper pins. We had sewn Velcro little Velcro strips on the cloth diapers because they didn't have disposable diapers with nice tabs. But you had to fold these diapers just right to get the Velcro to go together. And he said he couldn't do it. So he had left the baby with diaper pins. And I looked at those diaper pins and I thought, what am I going to do? I can't even change her. And I leaned over and I bit the diaper pins open. And I decided I can do this. So from then on, I used the diaper pins. I bit them open and I bit them to close them. And you know, as I worked with her, she would just lie happily as long as I was fussing over her and working with her. And I worked with these little buttons, these little snaps. And I can remember it took me so long to dress her, to get her out of her pajamas, dress her from start to finish, that by the time I finished, you know, little tiny babies, it was time to start all over again. Well, when she was 8 months old, I was asked to come back to that medical center. The doctors wanted to evaluate my progress, how I was doing physically, emotionally. I went back, and three doctors examined me, and they had my charts from my former time there, and they would ask me to do something, and two of the doctors say, you know, according to her chart, she should not be able to do that. And the other doctor said, well, you can see she's doing it. Those two doctors left, and the third doctor stayed, and he looked at me. And I will always remember his words. He said, God gave you an exercise of love in your baby. He said, we send people home from the hospital with exercises to do, like rubber balls they're supposed to squeeze to increase the strength in their hands. But he said they don't do them because it takes a lot of discipline and it's very discouraging when you don't see any progress. But he said God gave you an exercise that you love to do and you did it all day long and you had no idea how hard you were working. With each little button and snap, my right hand had gotten stronger. Lifting her in and out of that bassinet day after day had increased the strength in my arms. I am so grateful for that doctor. He's the first one who taught me to look for the blessings of God in my life, to see what God had done for me. We decided to move to Colorado Springs, Colorado, so I could be closer to my sister. We began to look for a church home and couldn't find anything that really suited us. Larry went to a Rotary luncheon for brand new teachers, and the teacher next to him bowed his head before the meal. So Larry asked him, what church are you going to attend here in town? And he said, the Evangelical Free Church. And Larry came home and he said, you want to attend something called the Evangelical Free Church? We had never heard of it. Well, we drove up to the church that morning, and I still remember it was the old church, lots of steps up the front. There weren't ramps in those days. We got inside and they said, your Sunday school class is down in the basement. It was down a flight of stairs. There was a landing and then down another flight of stairs. But we went down. Our Sunday school teacher happened to be Lauren Sanney, who was president of the Navigators at that time. You know, as soon as we got there, we knew we were home. This was where God wanted us to be. Lauren chose four young men to disciple, and Larry was one of them. So Lauren met with Lauren Sanney every week, early in the morning, one day a week. A few months after we started to attend that church, we found out we were expecting another child. This one was Stephen Edward, born April the 10th, 1968. Steve was as different from Lori as night is from day. It took every muscle I already had to hold him on my table. I remember when he was probably about 3 years old, a little neighbor girl came running into the house and she said, Steven's on the roof of your house. He had climbed the rose trellis on the back porch, gone up the porch roof, and was on our roof. Well, Larry was there, so he went out and rescued Stephen from the roof of our house. I often think when I was in physical therapy, if you had a weak muscle, you took it through what they call the range of motion for that muscle. If the wrist was weak, they just take it through the range of motion. But as it got stronger, they put resistance against it. And I thought God was Lori's range of motion for me. But Stephen was resistance. Well, one day I saw an article in the Beacon, the Free Church monthly magazine, just a tiny paragraph that said the missionaries in Venezuela, South America need a handyman to come down for 5 months to finish up the brand new seminary. And as I read it, I thought, oh, Larry would love to do that. But of course we couldn't. You couldn't go to a mission field with a wheelchair. We had a small child in diapers. And Larry didn't have 5 months free. He just had the summer months. So I remember thinking, well, I hope he didn't see this article. Well, he came into the kitchen one day holding that copy of the Beacon, and he said, have you seen this article in the Beacon? And I said, yes, I have. And he said, how do you know which article I'm talking about? And I said, it's the little paragraph about Venezuela, isn't it? And he said, yes. He said, do you think we could do that? Well, I pointed out all the reasons why I didn't think it was possible, but it continued to bother him. So one day he came and he said, could we call headquarters, the home office, and ask them about it? And I thought, oh, what a good idea. We will call. They will say no. And we can forget about this. Well, he called. I remember him standing at the phone. He talked to Robert Dillon at the home office, and he said, I don't think the wheelchair is a real problem. And he said, you know, missionaries have babies in diapers. He said, we have a man who has volunteered already to go down, but he's going in April, and he can only stay 2 months. We need someone for the summer. And then he said, can we count on you? And Larry looked at me. I looked at him, and then he said, yes, you can count on us. We shared with our Sunday school class what we were going to do, and I was so naive. I thought if you volunteered to go down, they would pay your airfare. They would take care of your expenses. Well, thank goodness, our Sunday school teacher at that time was another Nev who knew the ropes. And he said, could we have a Schlotfeld night at church? You give your testimonies and we'll take up an offering to help you. So we thought, oh, that would be so nice. So we did that. We gave our testimonies. A friend of ours, Hobart Wheeler, went down the basement. He made some refreshments for after the service. So we went down for refreshments and they counted the cash that had been put in the offering plate. Oh, I left out part. Our Sunday school teacher got up before we spoke and said, I have asked the Lord for $1,000 to help the Schlotfelds. And I remember feeling very embarrassed. It was not a big church. It was a Sunday night service and not a lot of people there. And I thought, oh, he is going to be so embarrassed. I had so little faith. Well, when we went down for refreshments, they counted the cash and the slips that people had put into the offering plate saying, I don't have the money with me, but I would like to give this amount. It came to $999. And Hobart pulled a dollar out of his billfold. And he said, this makes $1,000. Go to Venezuela. So that's how we went to Venezuela the very first time as short-term missionaries for a summer. Well, I watched Larry during that summer. I watched him fall in love with the people of Venezuela. So I was ready for his question when we came home. Can we go back as full-time missionaries? We applied to the mission board, and the candidate secretary was not very happy about the thought of a wheelchair as for full-time missionaries It was a concern to him, the expenses that might be involved. So he decided to pull the field and bless our dear missionary family in Venezuela. They said, no, we'd like to have the Schlotfelds back. So we went to language school in the Rio Grande Valley and returned to Venezuela in February of 1973. We started to attend a church there called Hillgal. A few months after we started to attend that church, we found out that we were expecting again, and Larry said, we are going to stop changing churches. Well, that's it. Well, you all know that one. This is Lauren David. He was born in Caracas, 1975, October the 22nd. As I looked at Lauren, I thought, Lord, I understand why you gave me Lori. I understand why you gave me Steve. But I wonder why you gave me Lauren. And Lauren answered that question for me once when I was giving my testimony. When he heard me say that, he leaned over to his older sister and he whispered, just for joy. Lauren has always made us laugh. I remember one time when he was 5 years old, I always felt vegetables were good for the kids. And his daddy had told him, you know, a big boy of five can eat at least five green beans. Well, Lauren and I were sitting at the table. His brother and sister had been excused, and Larry was in the other room. And we were looking at five cold, ugly green beans. And he looked up at me, and he sighed, and he said, oh, Mom, I could never live to be 100. Well, in 1984, we were asked to move to Minneapolis to be in the home office. They asked Larry if he would be Latin America director. So we moved to Minnesota. We were there 15 years. Larry did a lot of traveling to the Latin American countries, and on weekends he would speak at different churches. So we spent a lot of time alone, Lauren and I, after his brother and sister were gone from home. And I began to realize I needed a ministry. I needed something to do. On the field, I served on committees. When we had work crews came down, I was responsible for feeding them like the other missionary wives. When I remember one term, Larry was principal of the school, and he also was head of the camping program. So I was missionary. I was the treasurer for the missionary children's school, treasurer for the camp. And I missed that. So I told the Lord, I need something that I can do at home, a ministry I can do at home. I couldn't think of a single thing to do, but I began to pray. Well, we got our little community bulletin, and they were offering free Braille transcriptions at a school about 3 or 4 blocks from our home. And I looked at that, and I thought, oh, that sounds really interesting. So I called, talked to Mary Archer at State Services for the Blind, and I said, can you do this with one hand? And she should have said no. Because we brailled on a Perkins Brailler, which has 9 keys that you press. The Braille cell has 6 keys that you have to press. Well, she came with keys that were extended out and close together. And I was able to braille with my one hand with a little help from my left hand. So I learned braille, and I proofread the class for some years. I taught the class for some years, and I loved it. It was all volunteer work. I know people would sometimes say, you do this, and you're not paid for it. I said, no, I loved it. I did textbooks for the children in the school systems. I remember once reading a biography of one of the blind students at St. Paul High School. And they asked him what his favorite subject was, and it was biology. And I went to look at my records, and I had brailled his biology book. That was wonderful. I was able to do Bible studies for some ladies in California so that they could have the study with the other ladies. They could, if they didn't have a Bible, I brailled the verses that they were to look up. So I really loved the braille. Well, after 15 years, the cold began to get to be too much for me. And so we decided we really needed to retire and move somewhere warm. We were at a small cell group one night, and one of the men there said, "If you were to retire tomorrow, where would you go?" And I said, "The Texas Hill Country." He said, "Well, that didn't take you long to answer." And I said, "No. When we had been in the Rio Grande Valley, we had traveled up through the Hill Country to go home on the holidays. And I thought the Hill Country was beautiful." So Larry and I came down, and we looked at property in the Hill Country. We found beautiful property, but it just didn't feel right. Both of us sat at this one home, and all I could think of was, I want to go back to Minnesota. So I began to look online, and I found property out in this area. So I asked my son, Stephen, who was living in Austin at that time. They had moved down ahead of us, and I said, "Would you go look at this property?" He did, and then he answered me back, and he said, "I didn't see anything," but he said, "Did you know there are pine trees?" "There are beautiful pine trees." Well, Larry had always loved the Colorado pines in the Rockies, and he would like to have retired there, but it was too cold for me. But we found pine trees and warmth. So we came down, and we looked and looked for a home, but we couldn't find anything suitable for the wheelchair. So our realtor finally said, "What if you bought property and built?" So that's what we decided to do. We hired a builder. We told him what we wanted, and we left for Minnesota. Well, people up there said, "You're having a house built, and you're not supervising it?" I think they thought we were nuts. Well, we moved into our new home the next year, 1999, and it was wonderful. As Larry did a walkthrough, he couldn't find anything really to complain about. And this builder had put in rounded corners so the wheelchair wouldn't catch them and chip them. He had made sidewalks, large sloped sidewalks, all the way up to the front door and the back door, long extended ramps. We found out later that his mother was in a wheelchair. He had put in all kinds of extras for me. Well, as you all know, in 2011, the wildfires came through and we lost our house. We lost most of our possessions. But you know, during that time, we saw so many blessings. I couldn't even begin to recount them all. It was incredible. And as we went around, people would say, "Oh, I'm so sorry for what you're going through." And I would say, "You know, God has taken us through much harder times." And I was able to share my testimony in ways that I never had before. And we found a new home. We were in that new home before a month had passed. And it is just perfect for us. You know, as I look back over my life, I think how blessed we have been. I will be 73 years old next month, when the doctors didn't think that I would live to be 25. We think back. I asked Larry the other day, I said, "You know, when you were icing me down, do you ever remember giving me antibiotics?" And he said, "No." Dawned on us both, we don't ever remember me taking antibiotics. I remember aspirin and to take down the fever till my ears rang. But I think they truly had thought it was hopeless that I would not survive. But God had other plans. I'm not going to pretend that there haven't been hard times, because there have. Life is like that. But all the good times have by far outweighed the bad. And God has been so faithful and has blessed us in so many ways. I was thinking the other day, I have so much. I have a God who loves me, a husband who loves me, a family who loves me, and a great big family of God all over the world who love me. Little girl growing up in Kansas, and I never dreamed where God would take me. I have been snorkeling in the Caribbean. I have taken a Seattle ferry off the coast. I have flown in a helicopter over the battlefields of Gettysburg, visited Alaska, Canada, Mexico, and I ended up in Texas. What more could I want? You know, as we come home on furloughs, one of the beautiful things was coming home and seeing the Christian music that had been written. And I remember when we came home and the Gaithers had begun to sing, and I heard their song called Something Beautiful. And I told Larry, that's our testimony. The words, and I will say it in plural, said how lofty, if ever there were dreams that were lofty and noble, they were our dreams at the start. And the hopes for life's best were the hopes that we cherished down deep in our hearts. But our dreams turned to ashes. Our castles all crumbled. Our fortune turned to loss. So we wrapped them all up in the rags of our life, and we laid them at the cross. And he made something beautiful of our life.